Okay, we have lovely background music. It goes on and on. We are doing our last session of the afternoon. And once again, we are turning it over to Glenn Crosby, who will introduce his guest.
Once again, I want to welcome everyone to this hour of our retreat. We've just gone past the halfway mark. I hope that each and every attendee has found a tip or two that will be useful to you, because our goal here is to help you find ways of living the life you want with non-visual techniques. So I hope you've found something that you can hang on to and that will be helpful to you. Now, in this hour, as I've explained before, we explore different topics every day. So none of these are the same. So this afternoon, we're going to be learning about how to manage, how to maintain our good health, if you will, and how to manage good nutrition. And we have an expert with us. So please welcome Lynn Bailiff.
Hello, everybody. I'm so glad to be with you today. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a registered dietitian. I specialize in diabetes education, but most recently I taught a 9-month-long class for our affiliate, the NFB affiliate in Missouri, via Zoom. So I really enjoy things like what we're doing today, just talking about nutrition and healthy lifestyle. It's important for all of us, no matter what age we are. We feel better if we're, you know, eating healthy and taking care of ourselves. Now, does that mean you can't have a treat? Absolutely not. So I just want to let you all know that I am a strong believer in moderation and things that you really love. I would never, you know, want you to give up unless it was just medically absolutely necessary. So I just wanted to leave you with that thought up front. So as I was thinking about today and really what we should kind of cover, a couple of topics sort of came to my mind. So we're going to just talk, you know, briefly about a couple different things. First, we're going to talk in general. I know that I saw that you all were making dinner together. And I know you've learned hopefully some new tips about how to prepare food in the kitchen. So first, we're going to talk about just general healthy eating, you know, like what should our diets generally look like, an easy way for you to kind of keep an eye on that. Then we're going to touch base on, you know, for people who have chronic disease, whether it be heart disease or diabetes or, you know, anything like that, you know, where you can get information about specialized diets for chronic disease. And then I want to touch a little bit on being active. We'll talk about that. And then lastly, I'm going to touch a little bit on dietary supplements, because I know a lot of people will have questions when I do talks about that. So let's start with just general healthy eating. So we want to try to make sure that we're getting foods from what we used to call those four food groups. And we want to do that because each of the food groups is going to provide you with different types of nutrients, vitamins, minerals, and then the nutrients that we use for energy, whether it's protein, fat, or carbohydrates. So the easiest way to think about this is if you take your plate, and this works really well for lunch or dinner. Breakfasts are a little different. So let's just pretend we're making a dinner, and you're going to take your plate, and you're going to divide it in half. Half of your plate should be vegetables with a little bit of fruit. So if you're like, I'd like to have fruit for dessert, maybe a quarter plate vegetables, a quarter plate fruit. Or if you like to have multiple vegetables with your dinner, just have a whole half plate full of vegetables. Maybe you put some salad on there. Maybe you have, you know, a cooked vegetable. I know last night I made some eggplant with some tomatoes. I just chop it up, do it real quick in the skillet. It doesn't take very long. So maybe you had some of my eggplant. So that took up half your plate. Okay, you had some eggplant, you had some salad. Now we have a half a plate left. So what are we going to do with that? You're going to divide that other half of your plate in half again. So you've got two quarters. One quarter of your plate should be your protein food, whether that's chicken or fish or turkey, whether it's lean red meats. We really want to try to focus on our turkey, chicken, and fish more often than we're having red meats, even if the red meat is lean. So, and that's to protect you from colon cancer. If we try to limit red meat to one or two times a week, it does decrease your risk of colon cancer. I think that's very important. So we got a quarter plate of our meat or protein. It also could be vegetable protein. Maybe you have some tofu. Maybe you have, you know, another soy-based protein product, but some kind of protein, quarter of your plate. So now we've got a quarter plate of protein, a half a plate full of vegetables, and we got that little quarter of your plate left. And that's where we're going to put any kind of starchy food, whether it be a grain product like pasta or rice, quinoa, you know, any kind of grain. Could be bread, like if you were making a sandwich, you could have two slices of bread there as your grain on that quarter of your plate. It's also a place you can put starchy vegetables like potatoes, white potatoes, sweet potato, or corn, green peas, or any kind of legume-y kind of bean like mama beans, black beans, garbanzo beans, any kind of bean that's a legume would go there. Now, string beans, if you like them, I love string beans. Those are a vegetable. And so they're going to go on that big section of your plate where you're putting all your vegetables. So that's kind of how you can think of a dinner meal. And you know, depending what you want to start with, some people say, okay, I'm going to start with my protein food. I'm going to have chicken. I'm going to have fish. Then you go, what am I going to add to that? I need some kind of starch and I need a bunch of vegetables. The trick that my mother always used was we always had a salad with dinner, always. It didn't matter. It could be a cucumber tomato salad. It could be a like lettuce-based salad, but there was always a salad. And so that really boosted up intake of vegetables at the meal. That's one way to go about it. Or maybe you just make a whole bunch of like stir-fried vegetables, or you like to have two different kinds of vegetables. You know, experiment and just find ways to kind of get in more vegetables for your meal. Like I said, this works great for lunch and dinner. Breakfast is a little different because we're eating a little differently. It doesn't usually look like our plate, but for breakfast, I usually would suggest, you know, trying to have some form of protein, whether it be from dairy. You know, you could have milk, you could have yogurt, cottage cheese, you could have, you know, some eggs. And it's okay. The American Heart Association says we can have up to 7 eggs a week, regardless of what your cholesterol is. So it's okay. You can have 2 eggs every other day and end up being pretty well okay. Or peanut butter, you know, another option for protein. And then maybe you have some kind of starch, whether it's like some toast or some oatmeal or some fruit. And, you know, make a breakfast kind of those components, you know, to be something that would be satisfying. A couple little caveats I want to throw in here is that we talked about picking our protein foods. With our grain products, it's good if like half the time, not all the time, but at least half the time, you're picking grain products that are going to have a little more fiber. It could be something like oatmeal or a whole grain cereal, maybe a whole wheat bread. Maybe you're like, I hate whole wheat bread and I'm never going to eat it. That's That's okay. There are other whole grain options. You can get the wheat white bread, which is basically going to have a whole grain in there, but it has the texture of a white bread. And you know what you want to do is just be aware. It should tell you on the front of the label that it is a high fiber product. With rice, you know, you could think of brown rice or wild rice, or trying something different like some quinoa, wheat berries, you know, something like that as a side dish can be really fun. Oh, farro is another one. I really like farro. It has a nice little nutty taste to it. With a potato, the fiber is the skin. So, you know, if you're going to make yourself a baked potato or a sweet potato, you know, eat the skin. Don't throw it away. Even if you're going to boil up some potatoes, I like to make what my family calls smashed potatoes. So that's where I leave the skin on and I kind of smush it up with I usually use like a fork to sort of smush them all up. So they're still kind of lumpy. And then I add a little milk or a little like plain yogurt, you know, something to kind of give it some flavor, some chives, and whip them up. It's easier than making mashed potatoes and you get the skin. So it's kind of a bonus. So that's the way I want you to think of, you know, planning your meals. Now snack time rolls around. Okay, you're like, what am I going to have? A great place to put things that you don't get at your meals. It could be some fruit. It could be, you know, a yogurt, you know, maybe, you know, some peanut butter and some crackers, you know, something of that nature. It's okay to have, you know, sweet treats, but we really, all of us need to really be careful on the amount of added sugar that we're eating. And the reason for that is we've learned in the past few years that added sugar, whether it's, you know, white table sugar or honey or fructose or any of these sweeteners, if we're eating a lot of them, it increases inflammation in our body, including in our blood vessels. And it contributes to things like heart disease. It can exacerbate pain if you have pain from arthritis. So trying to just be reasonable with your added sugars, I think is really a good thing. It can actually help us to feel better. All right, so that's kind of just the basic healthy eating, you know, what to do. Again, everything in moderation, sort of thing. Now, if you have a chronic disease that might influence how you should be eating to manage that disease, like for example, if you have diabetes or heart disease, where do you get information about how to eat in those circumstances? And I don't have time today to go through all of those things, but I wanted to point out to you that if you need help figuring out, you know, what's the healthiest thing for you to eat, start by talking to your doctor. And you can ask for a referral to see a dietitian. Now, depending on your insurance, they will pay for different types of referrals to dietitians. They may not pay for everything. So I just want to make you aware of that. Generally, they'll pay for if you have diabetes, if you have, you know, kidney disease, usually it'll be covered. Whereas heart disease and things like that, maybe less so. But sometimes just having, you know, the investment of one visit with somebody to talk to about things is helpful. Another resource I would say for you is if you are comfortable on the internet, is to look at, you know, well-founded organizations that provide scientifically based evidence information to you, like the American Heart Association or the American Diabetes Association or any of the parts of the National Institute of Health or hospitals. So like, I like to go on and search like, I don't know, heart healthy diet from like the Cleveland Clinic or the Mayo Clinic, or like here in Baltimore, I'd search for like my local hospital. And you can find a lot of information on those types of sites just to supplement your knowledge. So does anybody have questions about sort of just healthy eating or, you know, where to get information if you have a chronic disease and you need to eat maybe a little differently?
Hello, I have a question. This is Alice from Bowie, Maryland.
Hi, Alice.
Hi. So you mentioned, I love the plate, division of the plate as a strategy for measuring what types of foods you need, the amount and so forth. I love that. But you mentioned the quarter portion of the plate where you would put corn or peas, starchy vegetables, and you mentioned beans. I always thought beans was another form of protein.
Yeah, so beans are interesting. They definitely contain protein, but they have a lot of, but they also have a lot of carbohydrates in them, which is why we put them with that section of the plate.
So let me ask you this. So if that's my elect, if I elect just to have beans and no meat, no chicken or fish at a particular meal setting, that's okay, right?
Yeah, so I'd probably, try to limit yourself to like half a plate of beans and then a bunch of vegetables. And, of course, it depends how you cook your beans. I like to make beans with lots of vegetables in it, like a stew. And so sometimes we eat things that are like everything on your plate all mixed together. And so then it's okay. I would just, limit yourself to like, a cup, maybe a cup or two of that, and that would probably fill you up because there's lots of fiber in those beans.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's see. I see a number 920, caller ending in 9206, and you can unmute. Hit star six, please. You can unmute. I see your hand up.
Hi, this is Judy. I have a question that I would get varying answers to depending on who I talk to. And it's the topic of protein powders. I've heard it said protein powders are an excellent source of protein, energy, particularly if you're working out. I've heard it said protein powders are not good for you because they are so rich. Really don't do with them, and they just kind of hang around in your body and give you with your protein water now.
Yeah. I question the protein water, honestly, but protein powder, there's lots of different protein powders out there. The ones that are going to give you like the most protein with the least amount of calories are going to be whey-based protein, be like my number one pick. So like, you can buy pea protein powder, which has a lot less protein than a whey protein powder. Now, having said that, the American diet generally provides way more protein than we actually need for our bodies. And just like any other nutrient, if you eat more than you need, it's going to get stored as fat. So I often quite, it's like one of those things. If you're not a big breakfast fan, and so for breakfast, you make a smoothie with lots of vegetables and some fruit, and you want to throw a little protein powder in there for your protein, like I'm good with that. But I don't think most of us need protein powders if we're eating three meals a day and having protein at those meals. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
so it depends on the context. Go ahead.
Okay. And then I have a question about soy. I have heard it said you should not eat soy because there are human receptor sites. And there's a HORP, they contain estrogen and they bind to those receptor sites and yada, yada, yada. So what you say about soy, and is it healthy? Should we stay away from it?
Yeah. So, it is true that soy, it acts like a natural estrogen. However, eating soy is not like, the big concern is like, if I eat soy, am I increasing my risk for like estrogen-based cancers, like breast cancer? And the scientific evidence says that no, If you look at, you know, Asian populations, they eat a large amount of soy and they don't have an increased incidence of those types of cancers. So I think that soy as part of a balanced diet is perfectly fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So enjoy that tofu.
Well, can I ask another question, if you don't mind?
Go ahead.
This is Allison again. What are your thoughts on almond milk, these new avocado toasts? I mean, the trend that these younger, the Gen X.
Yeah, you know, there's a really funny video out there on YouTube about this. It's older people trying some of these quote fad foods. It's really quite enjoyable. I would say avocado toast is delicious. Avocados are a healthy fat. So they're also, if you're eating fresh avocado, they're very high in fiber. So it's a great way to get, you know, some healthy fats. You know, think about it. You could take your toast and put, you know, butter or margarine on it, or you could put some avocado slices. I like to put some avocado on there with a little bit of like little lime juice. I just squeeze it on top. And then in the summertime, I throw some tomatoes on top of there. And that's some kind of good taste and stuff. Now, almond milk, again, non-dairy milks are fine. You want to make sure that they're fortified with calcium and vitamin D because that's what we get from our dairy products. They don't provide as much protein. So a cup of cow's milk is 8 grams of protein, and a cup of almond milk, even though it's made from nuts, is only 1 gram of protein. So it kind of depends what you're trying to get out of your milk. You know, if you're not using it as a protein source, then you're probably fine. I mean, like, you know, the milks out there, you can get oat milk, you can get, you know, almond milk, you can get soy milk, you can get oat milk. I mean, it's just like crazy how many milks are. Personally, I drink cow's milk. I'm perfectly good with it. But I do like the taste of almond milk in my coffee. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So let's touch base now on being active. And, you know, being active may change as we age, depending on any kind of limitations that present themselves, whether it be like arthritis, if you have diabetes, sometimes experiencing like neuropathy, where you get numbness and tingling and pain in your feet can affect your activity level. So sometimes we need to make modifications. You know, a good exercise, if it's something that you can do, is walking. I know that you've all been like exploring using a cane to traverse, and being able to do some walking using a cane is a really great way to, you know, get a little exercise. Let's say it's winter time and it's like snowing and sleeting out there, and you're like, I'm not going out there for a walk. I don't blame you. I wouldn't either. So what do? You can walk inside. You know, you could go to, if you can get someplace like a mall or a grocery store, something like that, where it's a safe environment to walk inside, or you just walk around your apartment or your house, you know, walk around the dining room table. If you have steps, up and down the steps, walking in place, actually marching in place is a great way to get exercise, and you don't have to go anywhere. Now let's say, you know, your knees are bothering you, your hips are, or you've got some numbness in your feet. Another thing you could try are chair exercises, where you're just sitting in a chair and you sort of raise your legs, you know, do exercises, but you're sitting, and it takes the pressure off all of those joints. Another great way, if you've got joint pain, if you can find access in your area, is any kind of water activity. if you can find like a YMCA or a community center with a pool, the water makes you buoyant, so you don't get the pressure on those joints. So you could take a class, or you could just get in the pool and walk in the shallow end, just walk. And the water will take the pressure off, and it provides resistance so that you're actually, it's harder to walk in water than it is to walk on land. So those are just sort of some fun things to think about. We want to try to be active. You know, ideally, like if we all were as active as we should be, it'd be about 150 minutes a week of activity, or 30 minutes a day. But if it's been a while since you were that active, just start out with 5 minutes every day, doing a little something. March in place, do some leg lifts while you're sitting in the chair, raise your arms up and do some arm exercises while you're sitting in the chair. All those things are great ways to get started with just being a little more active, get your heart rate up, those sorts of things. And then once you're good with 5 minutes, then maybe you do 10 minutes. And just gradually increase every couple days. And you'll know, you know, when you reach a point where the exercise is, you're sort of reaching your limit, you just stop. But trying to incorporate it throughout the day is really good. Another little tip is, if you sit a lot, which I'm so many of us do, if you're sitting every hour, try to stand up, give yourself a good old stretch if you can, just get the blood moving a little bit. And then, you know, sit down, do whatever you need to be doing. And then in the next hour, again, take about 5 minutes, stand up, stretch, kind of march in place for a minute, get the blood flowing, sit back down. There's a lot of evidence that shows that just breaking up sitting time is really helpful for our circulation and just kind of keeping us healthy. Does anybody have any exercise that they do now that they'd like to share with the group?
I'm sorry.
I hear silence. I understand.
That's why I'm laughing.
I know. I know. It's okay.
So can I make a comment?
Yeah, sure.
If you don't mind, this is Alice again. I was told that sitting is the new smoking.
It's yeah, a that's good what way I was to think told. About it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
right.
I do have a question for you, if you don't mind, since I'm still uh-huh. talking. I'm having some issues with balance. Is there something mm-hmm. that you can recommend there? Because when I get up now, I find myself I have to stand for a few seconds to collect myself so that I don't fall.
Off-kilter. Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things that can cause that sensation that mm-hmm. I would say I would want you to talk to your doctor about that.
Okay.
Sometimes they can send you for physical therapy to learn balance exercises that then you can carry on at home. But make sure your doctor knows that you're having trouble with that.
Okay. Thank you. I will do okay. that.
Yeah. Sometimes we forget that we should tell our doctors things like that, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, we have a caller. The last four digits is 5459. If you would press *6 and you can unmute. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm on the phone because I wanted to talk about exercise. I do the elliptical usually almost every day. And I also have a personal trainer that comes once a week, and we do weightlifting and shoulder presses and squats and all those different kind of things.
Can we ask who's speaking? What's your name?
Mary Jo.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay.
So do you have a question, or you wanted to just share what you're doing?
I think she's muted. Next, Sally, you can go ahead. You're unmuted.
Yeah, I just wanted to share what I was doing.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Okay, this is Sally. Hi,
Sally. Hi. I just wanted to share that I swim, and I've worked with my aquatic center. And they've helped me, you know, they will put out a cone for me at the corner of the pool. And if I call ahead and let them know that I'm coming, they actually will set aside a lane for me. I come at a time when the pool isn't crowded. They've given me sort of an outline of when good times are for me to come. And we work together. And I have just barely enough vision to see the line on the bottom of the pool if I wear goggles and I use the snorkel, so that I can just keep my head looking down at that line, and I'm able to swim, do long distance swimming that way. And the water feels great. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So Sally, did you know that there are totally blind long distance swimmers?
I am beginning to understand that. I don't know how they do. I've heard of that some swimmers use echolocation for that, but I don't really, well, I guess I can see, but depends on how far they're swimming. I swim about 3/4 of a mile to a mile at a time.
I can't tell you how she does it, but this last weekend, one of our blind Minnesotans was entering the Ironman race, and I think it was in Maryland.
Oh, I would love to talk with her about that. It's hard to find information about blind swimmers. Yeah. But it feels great. It's just such a freeing feeling being there in the water with the pressure all over your body at the same time equally. And you're not bumping into stuff, hopefully. And it just feels great.
That's really good. I'm so glad. And I don't know this person from Minnesota who did the swimming. And maybe there's some way we can hook the two of you up.
We will try and do that.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is Nancy Yeager. I've asked you to unmute. And after that, it's Joe Triplett. My suggestion is, since Joe, you're unmuted, why don't you go ahead and start it? Nancy, if you can get unmuted, that would be great.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say one thing that I do. I'm 74 years young, and I have a friend who comes over to my apartment anywhere from 3 to 5 times a week. He works at a high school. He's a high school basketball coach. But anyway, we come over and we walk anywhere from a half a mile to a mile in almost any kind of weather. I mean, the only thing it stops is this rain and snow. It was like 44 or 45 today here in Inglewood. And we got out and walked twice, so we do a half mile to mile. I was doing a mile a day, which was about 5 miles a week. And about a year and a half ago, I think it's close to a year and a half ago, I went from 243, and now I weigh down to 209. And my goal is to get down to 160. I've been told I should go to 150, but I haven't been to 150 since high school. I mean, but this is what I do. And one thing I used to do when I used to attend the National Federation of Blind Conventions, my wife and I, once in a while, we get out to the pool. I used to walk in the pool. I could walk 2 miles in the water after I got in condition. And you're right. I didn't hardly feel it. But what I felt was, when I got out of the pool, I felt really great, relaxed, and, you know, and it's like I could almost walk faster. So that's what I do right now. But thank you for the suggestion of just like walking around the apartment, or, you know, standing up and just doing some stretching exercises or whatever. So, you know, anyway, that's a great idea. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And Joe, I got to say, you're really right that the suggestion of you to be like 150, if you haven't been that since high school, that's too low for you, you know? So I like your goal of 165. And you know what? Given how much you've already lost, I think you're going to make it.
Thank you. I believe I will.
Okay, next is Patricia Jenkins, and I've asked you to unmute.
Hi, this is Patricia Jenkins from South Carolina. I wanted to share with you what I do, and then I had one quick question about the diet. I walk about 5 miles a week. Before I do that, actually, I have sciatica. So I do my stretching and my exercises for my sciatica, and then I walk.
Good, good.
And the question is that I was a teacher, you know, I'm retired, but I was a teacher, and the nurse at the school, I had a child who had diabetes, and the nurse at the school told me that there were carbohydrates in everything that we eat, even chewing gum. She told the girl not to chew some gum, and you know, the salads had carbohydrates in it. So she counted all of the carbohydrates that the girl was eating and then gave her an insulin shot. Is this all true, that there's carbohydrates in everything we eat?
Well, some foods are very low in carbohydrates, like those non-starchy vegetables and our protein foods, and they really have minimal impact on your blood sugars. So when I teach somebody to count carbohydrates, we're really looking at fruit, dairy products, except for cheese, which is really more of a protein food. Dairy products, and then the starch, the grains, potatoes, and starchy vegetables. So yes, lettuce, salads have carbohydrates, but it's so low, it doesn't really impact treatment for diabetes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Last but certainly not least is Connie. And I've asked you to unmute.
Yep, I did. Okay, Connie from Pennsylvania. I take it you can hear me.
Hi, Connie. Yes.
Hi. I just want to tell a quick story, and I'm hoping that if anybody has a health problem, they'd find it an inspiration or something. But a year ago, next month, actually, I had a really bad AFib episode. The doctor warned me they'd be getting worse, and they did. And he said, you know, lose weight, exercise, check into a CPAP, or, you know, do a sleep study to see if you need one. So that one lasted over 8 hours, and I was quite miserable. So I decided to take his advice. So I did, I watched what I was eating, and I built up, just like she was saying, a little bit at a time. And to the point that I'm at a half hour on my elliptical, and then I do some weights, and then I do a half hour on my extra cycle, and then I do some floor exercises. And so I've taken off 35 pounds. I still have a few I want to lose, but I'm mostly there. And I have found that my, and I did do I do have a CPAP machine. I'm a very mild user, they said, though. So that's not a main contributor, but it could be. But I've gotten my AFib episodes down to very infrequent and so mild, I can sit there at my computer and write about it and decide, well, I don't think I should exercise right now because I can feel my heart's not quite right. And it's not lasting long. I'm able to do swing dancing now without shortness of breath, and it's really made a difference. So I'm thinking that even though I'm 69 years old, you know, I can change it and I can make things better. So that's it.
That's great, Connie. I'm really happy for you. Well, you know,
I just think it's a way to turn things around, you know.
Of course. Yeah. And you did a really great job. So things are great. And one thing I wanted to mention is it doesn't matter how old you are, being active to the level that you can is important because it helps us maintain our current levels of ability to be active. I think
when really just getting up from the chair. Then
are we having trouble with our connection? Does anyone else notice that?
I noticed.
Yes, Judy. She's for some reason she's fading out.
Yeah, but I don't know if she's aware of it.
We're having some Zoom issues, I think.
Works fine from this end. I think her connection is having a little trouble.
Then I think
there,
we lost.
There we go.
There you go. There she's back.
I'm sorry. I just totally lost the connection.
Well, you're back now.
All right. So what I was saying is that, you know, even that, even just maintaining whatever level of activity you can, it's just really important. It'll just keep you at that level so you don't decline. All right. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about briefly is dietary supplements. And this is because a lot of older people ask me, you know, you see commercials, you know, take X supplement and, you know, it'll fix X, Y, and Z. You know, it's good for your memory. It's good for your prostate. It's good for, you know, whatever. So should we believe all of these things that supplement manufacturers tell us? Well, again, I'm a dietitian. I believe in evidence, scientifically based evidence. And so first of all, I would say that supplement companies, just like food companies, want to sell you something, right? That's their goal, because if they sell it to you, they make money. So as the consumer, it's important that we educate ourselves about whether what they're saying is factual. So there are sources of information about specific supplements or specific topics, like what supplements are helpful for, you know, memory. And the two I would recommend is, again, if you're getting on the internet, one is called Consumer Labs. They do independent analysis of supplements. And then the second would be the National Institute of Health has a section for complementary and integrated medicine. And their website is really great because you can just look up a topic like memory. I actually did that not too long ago for another presentation. And it'll tell you, like, what does the science say? And then you can also look up supplements by, like, what they are. And it'll give you, like, okay, are there any risks to the supplement? You know, what's a typical dose? It's just a lot of really beneficial information so you can make a decision. If you decide you want to take a supplement, how do you know if the supplement is safe, if it has in it what it's supposed to? My tip for that is there are two independent groups that certify supplements. They're certifying like their manufacturing standards and that they contain what they're supposed to contain. And there would be a little seal on the bottle. So it would either be from NSF, as in N for Nancy, S for Sam, F for Frank, or a UPC seal. And that will tell you that these independent groups have certified that particular product. They're not certifying it to say, yes, it does what it says it does, but they're certifying it to say that it's manufactured to standards and, you know, it should not be contaminated or in any way harmful. One thing I want to point out, because I've seen this recently, and this really gets my goat, is a particular supplement will say, this product is approved by the FDA. The FDA does not approve dietary supplements. They approve prescription medications. So if a product says that, that is a dietary supplement, that is not factual. That is false. The FDA does have the ability to go after supplement manufacturers for saying things like that or making health-related claims on their labels, but they don't really have the staff to do that. And that's why there's a lot of supplements out there that still make health claims, that still say things like they're approved by the FDA. It's just because the FDA itself doesn't have the manpower to enforce the regulations that are, you know, part of the law. And I just want to make you all aware of that. Do I take dietary supplements? Yes, I take one or two. I do make sure that they have the seal from UPC or NSF. And I do so after I looked at the science that's out there and decided it was something I was willing to give a try. So does anybody have questions about dietary supplements?
Joe Triplett, you can unmute.
Yes, hi. My name is Jennifer, and I have a question. What is the highest limit of fish oil that one can take? The reason I'm asking is I do not eat fish, and I have high cholesterol, and I also have macular degeneration. So the cardiologist and the retina specialist both told me to take fish oil.
So I'm not really sure what the highest level you could take is. You know, I'd have to look it up.
Can I reword the question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm told to take 2 1,000 milligrams in the morning, and then 2 1,000 milligrams in the afternoon.
Yeah, that doesn't seem excessive.
Okay, thank you very, very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, go ahead, Joe Triplett.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Joe.
Okay, there's one supplement that I take. It's called Omega-3 Red. Are you familiar with that? And I want to ask you a second question. I have a friend of mine who she fixes a lot, some good healthy food. The one thing she doesn't, nobody in her family likes is potatoes. But what she does, she fixes rice. Is that a good substitution for potatoes?
Yeah, I mean, potatoes are going to contain some things that aren't found in rice. Like potatoes have a lot of potassium. They have a little bit of vitamin C. But as far as like, if you're thinking about your plate, you know, the rice would go right there on that starchy food section, that quarter of your plate. And it would be fine.
Okay. And go ahead.
I was going to say, as far as the supplement you mentioned, I'm not familiar with that particular supplement.
Okay. I drink about a gallon of orange juice a week. It's vitamin C, and we split it up and put it in 16-ounce bottles.
Okay.
Is that too much or not enough, or is that about right? I do 16 ounces a day.
Yeah. So, I mean, in general, eating fruit as like whole fruit is going to be better for you than drinking juice, because the whole fruit has the fiber, whereas the juice, they threw the fiber away once they got the juice out of it. So, you know, what I would say is that maybe drinking like half that much juice, but then eating fruit like once or twice a day would probably be a little healthier.
Okay. And I do, I eat a banana every morning, and my friend gives me them great big bananas, and I love bananas.
That's great. Yeah, bananas are good for us. They're very high in potassium. So they're fine.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next is Judy, and then after that is Alice's iPhone. Judy, go ahead.
I'd like to know if there's any such thing as taking too many dietary supplements. I was diagnosed with osteopenia a couple of years ago. I can't take Citral, Caltrate, those type things. They upset my stomach. So I take 2 calcium pills that I think are 100 milligrams each, vitamin D, which are 500 international units, I take a vitamin for women over 50 and something for joint health. And every once in a while, I wonder, am I doing myself more harm than good by swallowing all these pills?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't sound like you're overlapping supplements. Do you know what I'm saying? Because you've got the vitamin D and the calcium. That's for your bones. The women's supplement isn't going to have a lot of calcium in it because you know how big those calcium pills are that wouldn't fit in your little supplement. So that's just giving you probably a basic, as long as it's like a basic like multivitamin that's no more than 100% of the recommended daily intake, that one's perfectly fine. And then the one for your joints probably has something totally different in it. It's probably like the glucosamine chondroitin or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it sounds like they're all different. It's not like you're doubling up on anything really.
Is there any such thing as taking toxic levels of vitamins or any kind of dietary supplements?
Yes, there is. You can take toxic levels of vitamins and minerals. That's why we want to make sure that any multivitamin you're taking should not provide more than 100% of the recommended daily intake. And it will tell you that right on the label. It'll be like, okay, vitamin A, and then it'll give you like, sometimes it'll give you milligrams. And then next it'll say what percentage of the recommended dietary intake that is for the day.
Are there any dietary supplements that are recommended good for the retina of the eyes? I mean, I see them in CVS and
there are a couple that are often recommended for macular degeneration in particular. I think like lutein, and I can't think of all of them off the top of my head, but there's a couple of them. But for, it just depends what's going on with your retina. For other eye problems though, there really aren't any that are thought to be helpful. There's actually a really good article about supplements and eye diseases on the National Institute of Health Complementary and Integrated Medicine website. You just go on the website and one of the choices will be conditions. And under conditions, I think it's like called like eye diseases. And it kind of goes through that macular degeneration really is the only one that supplements have been shown to be beneficial.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
Although of course,
a
deficiency in carotene or vitamin A can cause eye problems, but not in the United States. We get enough of that.
Next is Alice, and then we have the number, someone with a number ending in 3130. Go ahead, Alice.
Okay, thank you. So the supplements, some supplements want you to take them twice a day. What are your thoughts on that? And also, is it best to take your supplements with food or does it matter?
So as to how many times a day you take it, what we're really most concerned about is how many milligrams of the supplement you're taking per day. And again, to find out sort of the sort of safe range for supplements would be to look it up in either the Consumer Labs or the National Institute of Health. Whether you take it with food or without food, again, it does depend on what it is. Like generally a multivitamin you're going to take with food because it'll cause your tummy to be upset, you know, whereas like an iron supplement, generally it's better to take it without food because it's absorbed better. So it's kind of, you know, it just depends on what it is you're taking. I know that doesn't really give you a direct answer, but I kind of can't give you a general answer that would apply to everything.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, next is a number ending in 8221. Would you please unmute star 6?
Yes, hi. This is Jennifer again. If I may just say that for the macular degeneration, the retina specialists have told me to take ARADS, A-R-E-D-S, because it apparently contains the lutein, the zeaxanthin, whatever it is. So I'm not promoting this product, but that is what I have been asked to take. So just a little yeah. FYI, A-R-E-D-S.
Yeah, and that's really great. And I think that, you know, especially if you have macular degeneration, talk to your ophthalmologist because they're going to know best as to how much of each thing to take, you know, is a great thing to do. They're up on that.
We are going to be running out of time in about 5 minutes. Do you know anything about something for that's good for cramps, like leg cramps or hand cramps?
So, I mean, it really depends on what's causing the cramps.
Yeah, if you don't know.
Yeah, I know, right? Sometimes, you know, cramps can be due to low potassium levels. And so instead of taking a supplement, I'd probably just eat a high potassium food like bananas or oranges to get a little extra potassium in your diet and see if it helps it improve. Mm-hmm. But that's the only nutrient I really know of that could do it. And again, I think it's more getting to the root of what's causing the cramps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there can be so many things.
Okay.
I do have a caller, 3130. I don't know, did you go yet?
No.
Very okay. I like Judy said, where time is running out, so make it, maybe we can make it quick, please.
This is Jamila from South Carolina.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
And my question, what's the difference between herbs and supplements? Herbs like Evelyn Primrose or... you know, something catnip, those type of herbs.
Yeah, so good question. So supplements kind of covers, like, it's like an umbrella term. And under that would be things like vitamins and minerals, herbs and botanicals, other, like, nutrient supplements. So they're all under that umbrella of a dietary supplement.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Glenn, I think if you want to wrap it up, and thank you.
I am here, and I want to thank you, Len, for coming and sharing with us this afternoon, and you've covered a lot of good topics. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of good questions, and I hope that everybody has gotten something from the presentation. So I want to thank you, Len, and I'll turn it over to you, Judy.
Great. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your retreat.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, I hope everybody has enjoyed today. I don't know whether we'll all get an email tomorrow reminding us, but you all have the information to come back tomorrow. And there will be a door prize at some point during the day. So get ready for that and enjoy your evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, hosts.
Have a great day.
We can end the recording. 128-133-125-Q. Alert. Judy has left. We can stop the recording if that's possible.